The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation. On MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, this is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to The Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Four simple ways women can lower the risk of heart disease is our discussion today, and that's because May is National Women's Healthcare Month. And we have Dr. Amay Shunney visiting with us, a women's health expert, as well as a spokesperson for Nordic Naturals, and in private practice in Santa Cruz, California. Dr. Shunney blends conventional medical diagnosis and treatment with the use of natural therapeutics, which is right down my alley. If we can get as much Eastern medicine into our system as possible, I'm all for it. So, Dr. Amay, thank you so much for joining us and really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. One of my first questions is how can it be that in the past 20 years, heart disease in the United States has killed more women per year than men?
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
I think that it's I think that there's probably two reasons behind it. I think the first is that we still have this very antiquated idea that this is a male disease, and therefore it's not only not on our radar as women, but I think even healthcare providers are guilty in that they don't look at their female patients to be at the same risk as their male patients. My hope is that, you know, that is changing. The other component in regards to why it kills us the way that it does is because we have this very classic idea of what a heart attack looks like, which is, you know, you get this jaw pain, this left-sided chest pain that goes down the arm, you sweat. And while a woman can certainly experience a heart attack that way, she can also experience it in a way that's also very vague. It can be completely painless. It can be just a pain. It can be a different pain in her back, a pain in her abdomen, a headache. It can also just be kind of fatigue and dizziness and lethargy. So again, so important to talk to your doctor, to really have a discussion about your family history, your current health concerns, your goals, and really, you know, get it on everybody's radar, how much you need to be monitored, how much you need to be concerned, and what steps you can take to lower your risk. I think education and awareness is where we have to begin.
What does heart disease mean?
It's a great question. It's a very broad term, isn't it? I mean, it's all manner of health conditions that impact the way in which the heart pumps, circulation, the electrical signaling of the heart, occlusion of the blood vessels. So it can be anything from heart attack and stroke to high cholesterol to plaque formation to just general circulatory issues. So it really is this very broad category. And as we've learned, you know, it not only does it kill more women than men in the country, but it is one of the top three killers in the United States, period. And then, you know, one of the things that we've learned about heart disease, and this goes on to include really all realm of chronic disease, is that there is a chronic inflammatory component that underlies the manifestation of these chronic diseases. And so that's the bad news. It's also the good news, because diet and lifestyle have tremendous impact on chronic inflammation. And therefore, we have a lot of control and a lot of power to actually change this risk profile for ourselves.
Okay, so this is when this gets sexy to me, because it's not like, okay, it's all bad news.
Right.
There's some awesome good news there. But what is a chronic inflammatory condition? What does that mean? How does that look?
Sure.
So, how does it manifest itself?
So let's talk about the difference between acute inflammation and chronic inflammation, because I think it's really confusing for the average person. Acute inflammation is when you cut your finger or you stub your toe, right, and it gets red, it gets painful, it gets swollen. These symptoms happen for a reason. They are an acute inflammatory response that's happening because of certain inflammatory chemicals that have been released into your body to produce that redness and that swelling and that pain, all of which are meant to localize infection, to bring oxygen and nutrients to the area so you can heal quickly, and, you know, to put you in pain and a little bit of discomfort so you stop moving it, for God's sakes, and let it rest and get better, right? So these are all things that are really important, and when we talk about decreasing inflammation, we never want to diminish this acute inflammatory response. It's essential. But what we've learned is that there are certain things that keep those inflammatory chemicals raised in our body for long periods of time. Now, obviously, this can be multiple traumas or infections, things like that. But what we've learned is that being overweight, a poor diet and inadequate nutrition, sedentary lifestyle, lack of sleep, high levels of stress, all of those things also increase those same inflammatory markers in the bloodstream. And when those markers are elevated, we start to see increased risk for all manner of heart disease, for cognitive issues, for depression and anxiety, for diabetes and weight issues, for certain cancers, and the list goes on and on and on. So really what it is it's this correlation of risk that we see between high levels of those inflammatory chemicals and all of these chronic health conditions. Again, because the standard American diet and lifestyle is such that most of us have way too much of that happening, when we change our diet and lifestyle, which I know is hard to do, we can actually really bring those inflammatory marker levels down, not only helping us feel better right away, but reducing our risk for that whole list of chronic diseases I just mentioned, including heart disease.
So chronic inflammation is something that we can reverse?
Yeah, it's these inflammatory markers, right? So I'm kind of talking about chemicals that the body makes to promote inflammation in the body. And what we want to do is we want to do things that are going to bring those chemicals down, because that's going to help with chronic inflammation. There will be less of it. We'll have a more anti-inflammatory environment in the body. And the good news, the sexy news, is that if we change our diet and we look at lifestyle issues, we can actually make great strides ourselves to get those inflammatory levels down.
Now, obviously, prevention would be ideal, but since a lot of us have been either lazy or haven't paid attention, you're suggesting that if we make some of these changes, like have an anti-inflammatory diet, that we might be able to reverse or certainly slow down the progression of the problems?
We absolutely can. I mean, I see it every day in my practice. I mean, I can monitor people's health and look at blood levels and how they're feeling and watch those changes happen when they make these dietary and lifestyle changes. So yes, absolutely. I mean, yes, prevention is best. And obviously the longer a condition has been around, the harder it is to completely reverse it, but we can still make big changes.
So can you list us some inflammatory foods that are probably common that we should avoid or limit?
Sure. I think that, sugar and processed food is a huge issue in this country and really creates inflammation in the body. Over-consuming red meat, over-consuming alcohol, caffeine, white flour products. Sugar and white flour products just break into sugar so fast, and they impact our ability to balance blood sugar, and that's inflammatory. So really, looking at minimizing those foods and swapping them out for healthier foods. So instead of simple carbohydrates, going for complex carbohydrates. These take longer to break into blood sugar or break into sugar because they have more fiber in them. They also have more nutrients in them. So this would be like brown rice instead of white rice, whole wheat instead of white refined wheat flour, and even exploring some of the more nutritious whole grains that are available, quinoa, millet, amaranth, things like that, things you may have never even heard of. Other important things to decrease inflammation in the body, one of the most important is good quality fats. So omega-3 essential fats that we get from fish and fish oil are essential for decreasing risk for heart disease, all types of heart disease across the board, as well as chronic disease in general. I also like to help have my patients emphasize other sources of good fats like avocado, olives and olive oil, nuts and seeds. All of those are really important as well. Protein is essential, again, balancing blood sugar, which is anti-inflammatory when that blood sugar is balanced. That involves getting adequate protein during the day so you have a sustained energy source. And we don't want to overdo it on red meat. We really want to avoid processed protein foods. So really, we want to look at, if you're eating animal, lean animal protein, chicken, turkey, maybe even pork for some people. Again, fish. And, you know, refocusing, I think, our diets in general on plant foods. And plant proteins would include, you know, beans, nuts and seeds, lentils. These are other really nutritious foods. And of course, fruits and vegetables are the most important part of an anti-inflammatory diet because of all the vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients that they bring as well.
And nuts and seeds, are there some better than others?
Well, you know, yes. There are. I mean, I think peanuts is kind of like the minimum wage of nuts. But to be honest, that's really less because of the peanut itself. And it's more because of the way in which peanuts are farmed. They're kind of used in rotation conventionally to replete depleted soil. So often what you're getting is a nut that's been grown in soil that's depleted. And so it's not going to be packed full of nutrients the way, say, you know, almonds or cashews or pecans or, you know, walnuts are going to be. I don't want to talk down on the peanut. It's really more the fault of our conventional farming techniques, frankly. But, you know, the nuts and seeds, the monounsaturated fats in there are so good for you. Avocados, you know, I think that we're still in 2014, so many of us still afraid of fat as if mm-hmm. it's going to make us fat. And it really, good quality fat actually helps your metabolism, helps you burn fat, helps blood sugar balance, helps you feel full and know when to stop eating, and is so important for cognitive function and overall health. So we really need to not be afraid of fat. And I think when we're talking about women's health, it's particularly true for us because so many of us are watching our weights and we don't want to eat anything that's going to make us fat.
In terms of olives, is there a difference between the black or the green?
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
Because I've often wondered if they have different properties. Because I would assume the green olives are the ones that make the olive oil. But then when I think to being in Europe, it's the black olives on the tree that the Spaniards press for their olive
Interesting.
Oil.
Interesting. You know what? I'm going to have to look that up. I have no idea. To my knowledge, you can get really good monounsaturated fat content from both types. But I do wonder if one is better.
And then I also heard, and I don't know if you would know this too, is that once you heat olive oil, it becomes quasi-toxic and or not oxidizing or something. I forget, there's some kind of term.
Sure. Well, every oil has its smoke point, right? So mm-hmm. you're really only supposed to heat it to a certain temperature before it starts to denature and kind of lose its shape. And when that happens, it's creating oxidative damage, which then you're going to incur if you eat that denatured oil. So it's really important that you understand the smoke points of your oil. A lot of people like to cook on high heat or even fry, and they're kind of shy about using what's considered a less healthy oil. So they'll take their olive oil because they know it's healthier and they'll cook it on high, but they're actually really doing them a disservice. You know, if you're going to cook on high, if you're going to fry food, you really need to use an oil that's meant to be heated to that temperature. So my suggestion, you know, I always say, have some good rice bran oil or some good grapeseed oil or something if you like high heat cooking. But really what you want to do is most of your cooking on, you know, medium or medium to low, in which case you can use your olive oil. One of the things I really like about the brand Spectrum, and I have no affiliation with them, is that on every bottle of their oils, and they make all different types of oil, they put the proper temperature to cook it at on the and that's
interesting.
So helpful because, you know, who amongst us is getting online for every oil we cook with?
And I wonder, though, how you, because I know there's meat thermometers, but I wonder how you would test the temperature of an oil, say, in a skillet.
Well, it's a good point, right? Because, you know, we certainly have ideas like, oh, well, medium heat won't take you past 300 or something like that. But a lot of it obviously depends on your stove and the flame, right? Electric versus gas. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, get a little crazy with it, but
because I've also been told that if we heat our greens more than 119 degrees, we're destroying the properties that we're trying to avail ourselves of.
Yeah, I mean, the less, you know, I like cooked food, I like warm food, but obviously overcooking it or cooking things too much, we are vastly reducing the nutrition that's available to us in the food. So it's something to keep in mind for sure.
So you mentioned omega-3 essential oils. aside from getting that in food, which would be what, deep Atlantic fish?
Yeah, omega-3 fats are actually in all seafood. It's in calamari, it's in shrimp, it's in all fish. It just can vary to degree. So some of the fish that have the highest amount of omega-3s in it would be like wild Alaskan salmon, sable fish, herring, anchovy, sardines. You know, think of your really oily fish. And of course, unfortunately, these are a lot of the fish that a lot of people don't like because they are oily. And we have a certain amount of contamination in the ocean, unfortunately. So considering that most people need a pretty high therapeutic dose of omega-3s, I find that a fish oil supplement can be incredibly useful because, you know, for most people to get the omega-3s they need, they would have to have at least a serving a day of fish, at least. And that's just not practical for the vast majority of people. The other thing I like about a fish oil supplement is that while people are making dietary changes, while they're changing their exercise regimens, looking at weight issues and stress and things that require time to make change, when you start taking a fish oil supplement, you're actually starting to change the inflammatory environment in the body right away. And so it's something that people can actually start to do proactively while they're making some of the deeper changes that, you know, are needed for more of a lifelong solution.
And when do you suggest taking supplements? Before or after meals?
You know, the thing about fish oil is that you can really take it any time because it's a fat, and so it's fat soluble. So you can take it with food or without food when it comes to fish oil. It really doesn't matter.
And I know some people object to it because they say they burp it.
Right. So if you're burping your fish oil, the first thing you need to consider is, are you taking a quality fish oil? Oils, you know, just like your cooking oils, fish oil is volatile. Once it's exposed to oxygen, it becomes rancid and you're going to burp it. And it's not a, it's an inferior thing to be taking into your body. You don't want it. Whether or not a fish oil is exposed to oxygen in the manufacturing process is directly related to the manufacturing practices. So you want a high quality company that's going to go to great lengths to ensure that their oil isn't exposed to oxygen in the manufacturing process. So often I find that when, you know, we get away from that, you know, 3-year fish oil supply at the big box store, which certainly is tempting from an economic perspective, and we actually throw down a little bit more money to get a higher quality oil, for most people, that issue goes away. I do find that there is a small population of people who I think have some issues with fat absorption and digestion in general. And so for them, I'm going to work more from a digestive angle while trying to get that fish oil in too, because oftentimes it's not just the fish oil. They're having some other issues in general.
And anything else you'd like to add? Thank you so much for sharing.
You know, if there's one thing I would add, Maria, it's the importance of self-care. I think particularly in the context of women's health, we seem so much more able to take care of the people around us, and we often let self-care go by the wayside. When it comes to heart health and inflammation and chronic disease, I try and really push this issue by asking my patients, if they're open to it, to create a list. If they can make a list of at least 3 activities and 2 relationships that, when they're doing those things, being with those people, they feel supported, they feel nurtured, maybe they get to laugh or just let their hair down, be real, and to really cultivate those activities and those relationships, just like they cultivate getting to work on time, getting good food on the table, getting to the gym, because those acts of self-care will help us manage our stress, which will make us better communicators, which will make us better caregivers and enhance the quality of our lives and our children's lives, our partners' lives, our employees' lives. So, you know, really, I think that should be prioritized just as much as the food and exercise recommendations.
It is so funny how, and I know this is a gross generalization, but we as women minister to others.
Yeah.
And it was only when I turned 50, my motto became, it's about me too.
Yes.
And then when my children, oh, I'm an empty nester, and then it became, it's about me. And it took me a while to get wrap my arms around that, because it sounds selfish.
Right.
But the truth is, just like you said, if we've taken care of ourselves, that affords us the opportunity to take better care of others.
Absolutely. And can you imagine if we started really supporting women to adopt that in their 40s or their 30s or
right.
younger? You know, then maybe heart disease wouldn't be killing us the way that it is.
Well, you have been so a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much for sharing. And, of course, we'll post your website when we post the podcast. And continued success, Dr. Shunde. I like your approach very much.
Thank you so much, Maria. It was a pleasure. I hope to speak with you again.
Me too. And thank you for listening to The Maria Sanchez Show.
about.